hppodcraft.com.
It has become needful for me, who am no wielder of the stylus of bronze or the pen of Calamus, and whose only proper tool is the long double-handed sword, to indite this account of the curious and lamentable happenings which foreran the universal desertion of Comorium by its king and its people. This I am well fitted to do, for I played a signal part in these happenings, and I left the city only when all others had gone. Now Comorium, as everyone knows, was aforetime the resplendent high-built capital and the marble and granite crown of all Hyperborea. But, concerning the cause of its abandonment, there are now so many warring legends and so many tales of a false and fabulous character that I, who am old in years and triply old in horrors, I, who have grown weary with no less than 11 lustrums of public service, am compelled to write this record of the truth ere it fade utterly from the tongues and memories of men. And this I do, though the telling thereof will include a confession of my one defeat, my one failure, in the dutiful administration of a committed task.
Old in years and triply old in horrors. That is definitely how I'm going to respond the next time I go to the doctor and they ask my age.
Yeah.
Triply old, buddy. That and all the other cool sounding phrases you just heard were from The Testament of Athemaeus by Clark Ashton Smith, a story we are covering here on the HP Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
And we're at hppodcraft.com. I'm Chris Lackey.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer. And that reader was Bill Sebastian. You may remember him from such tales as Ethan Brand and The Upper Berth. He's a fantastic reader. I'm so glad to have him back on the show. We don't have him on often enough. Thank you so much for doing this, Bill.
This story was picked for us by backer Richard Wolf.
I've actually emailed back and forth with Richard before, and I believe he's one of those guys who listens to the show on the treadmill.
Oh, whoa.
Which is great. Last week I was saying that a lot of folks tune into the show for financial advice, which is true. And, well, you know, if you think about it, people also use this podcast as fuel to get ripped.
Oh, right? Yeah. Totally.
We are a fitness, financial, weird fiction, triple threat.
Triple threat position.
And if I'm not mistaken, this is our 400th episode.
This is our 400th episode.
How about that?
That's insane.
It's crazy.
That is 200 hours of you and I talking about weird fiction.
Indeed. More than 200 hours of just us blabbing.
That, I mean, what is that in days? 24 goes into 200. That's like 8 days.
And if you listen to all of it, you will have the physique of a god and at least 2 speedboats because you'll be so fiscally successful. HP Podcraft, a new unnameable you.
Oh.
But folks, there will be some changes coming soon. We don't want to stagnate here after 400 episodes. Not taking anything away. We'll still be doing all the same good stuff, but we're going to be adding some things to the show.
Yeah.
Possibly broadening our scope a bit, but we'll be making some announcements about that on our May show.
That's
so
right.
Make sure you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, it's the Testament of Athemaeus. Let's hear about it.
This story starts off with this guy, Athemaeus, telling us a tale of the grand old city of Comorium. This was one of the first seats of power in the old days of Hyperborea.
So last week we looked at a story from Clark Ashton Smith's Zothique Cycle. This one is from the Hyperborean cycle of stories that he wrote. And we've actually done a couple of these before. The Tale of Setomper Zeros we did, as well as the Seven Geshes. These are not futuristic sword and sorcery tales like Zothique. These are prehistoric sword and sorcery tales.
Yes.
Hyperborea is a legendary continent in the Arctic. There is a rapidly approaching ice age, which threatens to wipe out all life there. There are a bunch of deities that play important roles in these stories. Foremost is the toad god Sothagua, who dwells in Mount Vormithedrith.
Wow, good job.
Sure. And we'll be talking a lot more about Sothagua next month, actually. But because Lovecraft borrowed from these stories, he used Sothagua and The Whisper in Darkness and I think The Mound as well. Smith borrowed back. Some Lovecraftian gods show up in these Hyperborean stories.
Mm-hmm.
So these could be considered Cthulhu mythos stories. Although, about this, Smith wrote in a letter to Derleth in 1944, "My Hyperborean tales, it seems to me, with their primordial, pre-human, and sometimes pre-mundane background and figures, are the closest to the Cthulhu mythos. But most of them are written in a vein of grotesque humor that differentiates them vastly."
Mm-hmm.
Grotesque humor. Let's keep that in mind as we check out what the case is here in the grand old city of Comorium.
As this story is being written, the king lives in Usildarum, and Athemaeus is now also living there because he is the chief executioner.
Right.
How he does it is with his sword. As he said at the beginning, he chops people's heads off.
That's right. It's the family business. His forefathers have been chopping off heads since before anybody can remember. It's his job. It was his dad's job, grandpa's job. That's what they do.
Now he's an old man, and there's lots of legends about Comorium, but he was there. He was the head executioner at Comorium when it was the capital of Hyperborea.
Mm-hmm.
And he can tell you what really happened. And he goes in to explain this city was awesome. It was the beacon of all the lands, a shining example to every other place in Hyperborea. Even the crappiest house in Camorium was like a palace compared to anywhere else. I totally believe him, too.
Yep.
And Athamaeus, he was proud to serve there. He felt a lot of pride in his job, and he was really good at cutting people's heads off. He could always do it in one blow, clean cut.
He says, my sinews have dwindled grievously now, which is another one I got to remember for the doctor. But even though he's old, his mind is active as he's lingering back and thinking about old Camorium. He's really itching to tell this story of what happened and why everybody fled, why the king lives somewhere else now, why they all had to go.
The whole downfall of this city starts with this outlaw, Nygathen Zaim. He was one of the Vormis people that lived in the hills a day's travel from Camorium. They said that the Vormis were kind of animal-human hybrid creatures. They're humanoid, but they were very hairy, they had long fingers, they had creepy eyes, and they worshipped Sothagua. There's a story that Lynn Carter posthumously wrote with Clark Ashton Smith called The Scroll of Morlock, which is all about the Vormish.
They are more beast-like than human. They have excessive hairiness, like you said. And then there's also the vile, ungodly rites and usages to which they were addicted. Ooh. I thought that was a weird verb to use. They're addicted to them.
Zaim kept his shenanigans on the outskirts of town towards the mountains. They would take people and they would do stuff to them. He doesn't say what, like maybe eat them or rape them. Or both.
This reminded me a bit of that recent Kurt Russell horror western movie, Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
There's a similar setup. There's a devolved cannibal monsters on the outskirts of town causing trouble, grabbing people up.
There are some legends about these people and that they have alien heritage and that they themselves are not actually human. Zaim is a bit different in that he doesn't have any hair on his body, but he has black and yellow spots all over.
It says he was related on the maternal side, or at least this is what they say about him. He was related on the maternal side to that queer, non-anthropomorphic god, Sothagua. So he's actually like a demigod, if you believe these legends.
All right, sure.
He's actually related, they say, on the maternal side. They know where it comes from, too, to Sothagua.
So rumors about him were that he is unkillable and that he could not be held or imprisoned. And of course, Athamaeus thinks that it's all just people being easily scared and superstitious, and he's a man of reason, so he doesn't buy into it.
Now, over time, Zaim, it's like Z-H, so I kind of like saying Zaim's raids are getting... Zaim is what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's what I hear in my head. For over time, Zaim's raids are getting bolder. I just Jeff Goldblum myself a little bit.
You did.
I didn't even mean to do it. As I was like, why am I just repeating that word? Anyway, Zaim's raids are getting bolder and more extensive and a bit much for the authorities out in the hills to deal with.
Finally, Zaim gets too close to Camorium and raids a nearby village.
The writing is great. Here he and his feculent crew committed numerous deeds of an unspecifiable enormity and bearing with them many of the villages for purposes even less designable. They retired to their caves. I don't really know what they did here, you know?
Yeah.
But it just sounds horrible.
This gets the people in charge all up in arms. They're going to go hunt this guy down. They're like, we got to take care of him. He has gone too far. Manhunt time.
Right.
But it takes months and months because this guy's pretty clever.
Yeah, and he keeps conducting raids while they're looking for him. So they can't find him anywhere, and then boom, he'll go in and take a place out. He's embarrassing the Camorian PD, basically. He's probably leaving taunting notes for the lead detective, like, we're not so different, you and I. Except my grandma is Sothagua, there's that. But otherwise, we're like two sides of the same coin.
But he slips up. Maybe he's too foolhardy or too confident or cocky, but they capture him.
Right, they capture him in broad daylight, and he doesn't put up any resistance. He just smiles and surrenders. Camorian PD does not feel good about that. It's not the way that he should be reacting to an arrest. But our guy, the executioner, is keeping an eye on developments with a particular interest because he knows he's going to be the one to cut off Zaim's head.
Zaim is a really weird-looking dude.
His limbs, his body, his lineaments were outwardly formed like those of aboriginal man, and one might even have allowed for his utter hairlessness, in which there was a remote suggestion of the shaven priest, and even the broad, formless mottling of his skin, like that of a huge boa, might somehow have been glossed over as a rather extravagant peculiarity of pigmentation. It was something else. It was the unctuous, verminous ease, the undulant litheness and fluidity of his every movement, seeming to hint at an inner structure and vertebration that were less than human, or one might almost have said, a lack of all bony framework, which made me view the captive with an unparalleled distaste. He seemed to slither rather than walk, and the very fashion of his jointure, The placing of knees, hips, elbows, and shoulders appeared arbitrary and factitious. One felt that the outward semblance of humanity was a mere concession to anatomical convention, and that his corporeal formation might easily have assumed, and might still assume at any instant, the unheard-of outlines and concept-defying dimensions that prevail in transgalactic worlds.
Whoa. So he seems mostly human, but he's kind of built in a really weird way. Like he's almost a creature in human skin is kind of the impression I get.
Right. The way he moves, he hints at a non-human inner structure. That's so creepy.
Yeah.
But then at the end of that, it says, you know, the unheard of outlines that prevail in transgalactic worlds. So it's not even something that you can imagine that's going on under there.
Yeah, definitely not human, this guy. No. But still, Athamaeus is going to get that head off of that body.
Gonna do it.
So they have a trial for him in which he never speaks to anyone. And he always has that creepy smile that you were talking about earlier. Mm. They even get translators in for him, but he says nothing to them. He seems to have no fear of dying at all, and he doesn't even attempt any kind of escape. He is sentenced to death, and Athamaeus has to do the deed.
Athamaeus has been at this long enough, and he knows there's something ominous in Jom's resignation, the fact that he's not upset about being put to death.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably not going to go well. And the night before the execution, he has terrible nightmares. But he is unfailingly punctual, great at his job, and he's up and ready for some head chopping the next morning.
The guards bring Zom out. Athamaeus is very intent on seeing this whole thing through. There's a huge crowd to see this very public execution. And then Athamaeus can see Zamas' eyes, and he says they are lidless, ochre yellow eyes with no pupils.
Mm.
I mean, this guy is really messed up looking. He's not, like, just kind of off. He's, like, totally another kind of creature.
Full bodysuit. You know, this isn't just some makeup application.
Yeah, this is like a Doug Jones character here.
That's right.
So Zom kneels at the chopping block and Athamaeus gets a look at his neck and he says, "It's loathsome underlying plasticity and invertebrate structure, nauseous and non-terrestrial beneath his impious mockery of human form."
Oof, it's really effective at grossing me out.
Yeah. And even though he's seen many men die by his hand, it's almost as though Zom didn't know that he was about to die. This is the impression that Athamaeus gets. It's like he just doesn't either seem like he cares or he's just oblivious to what's going on. He's not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, Athamaeus has got a job to do. He does it. Boom, chops off his head. But there's no blood, only a black, tarry, fetid exudation far from copious, which ceased in a few minutes and vanished utterly from my sword and from the Aeon wood. He also notes that there was no vertebrate in his neck. The king and the eight judges that sentence Zom to death feel pretty good about justice being done for the day, and the crowd loves it. They all cheer, "Justice, yay!" The end.
And that's it. That's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story.
Wow. Don't really know what the point of that was. That actually, it's not the end of the story, but that might be a great ending because there is sort of a creeping horror when things work out or are working out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If they just think, and for the rest of their lives, they all wondered, why was that so easy?
Yeah. Why was he smiling about?
Just a feeling of unease, yeah.
They got to get rid of his body. Criminals are normally buried outside of town in unmarked graves, and so is Zom. That night, Athamaeus has some more scary dreams, but they're only dreams, right?
Mm. Well, it says, "I retired that night after a bounteous meal of Suvana fruit and Jangua beans, well irrigated with foom wine." And you know how that is, a little foom wine is going to give you bad dreams.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started on the Jangua beans. Of course he had bad dreams.
Yeah, and gas.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Athamaeus awakens to the city having a bit of a freak out. It seems that Nagathin Zom is alive, and he ate a dude. Folks discovered him eating a citizen of Camorium, and then the guards attacked him, but he didn't seem to pay much attention to them attacking him until he was done eating, and he ate almost all the guy except just like left some of the bones, and then they captured him again.
It's such a crazy scene. He just showed up again out of nowhere, grabbed a respectable seller of Jangua beans right on Main Street and started chowing down, and people were hitting him with bricks and arrows. It wasn't like they were throwing eggs and oranges, you know. This was some serious stuff. He still didn't care.
Violence, yeah.
And then after he's captured, they don't know what to do, so they decide they gotta put him on trial again.
Yeah, they aren't sure, because legally, there's no precedent for this.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to execution. He was executed. So technically, sentence carried out. The end. But they're like, okay.
Unless you wake up and eat a guy out in front of everybody.
Well, that's a new crime. So he could be tried for that crime. Yeah. Being of a scientific mind, Athamaeus believes it has to do with Zom's ancestry, that he has some kind of weird alien biology.
Well, so they have to really quick pass a special statute that allows them to re-execute somebody who's already been killed, which is like, that's got to be one of those laws that people will not be able to understand years later. Why is this on the books? You know, like in Chicago, there's a law that it's illegal to give a dog whiskey.
What?
Why did that happen?
Who was giving a dog whiskey?
Well, and then what happened? Did the dog die and they were just sad? Or did the dog go crazy? You see the dog running down the street all Benji-like, but then there's like bar signs going by him because he's on a big bender, you know, wakes up in the garbage.
Why was it necessary to make a law saying that do not give your dog whiskey? Whatever that dog got up to was so heinous that people go, exactly. We can't let this happen again.
Yes, exactly. That's
Let's put it on the books.
Never again in Chicago.
They go examine the grave, but it's undisturbed. So they're like, that's strange. But they do find a small rabbit hole that goes into where he was buried, but they're like, how did he get out?
And when they dig everything up, there's just a slight stickiness where the body was. Mm-hmm. He can do some Plastic Man stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or Mr. Fantastic or Stretch Armstrong. Or
sure. Elongated Man.
Elongated Man, whoever your preferred stretchy person is. That's what this guy can do.
So they have a trial again and decide that they're going to have him buried this time in a strong wooden sarcophagus. And then they're going to put that in a stone pit, which would be then filled with boulders.
Is this Zom guy actually David Blaine?
It is David Blaine. That is correct.
It's been all been a setup for his new Vegas trick.
Television special. So the next morning, he's going to be executed, and Athamaeus notices that Zom looks different. It says the huge splotches of dull black and sickly yellow that had covered him from head to heel were now somewhat differently distributed. The shifting of the facial blotches around the eyes and mouth had given him an expression that was both grim and sardonic to an unbearable degree. Also, there was a perceptible shortening of his neck, though the place of cleavage and reunion, midway between head and shoulders, had left no mark whatsoever. And looking at his limbs, I discerned other and more subtle changes. It's him, but he's different?
Yes, death has changed him in some way.
Zom kneels down, and chop, off his head goes. They bury him as they decreed, and everything is all right. So finally, that is the end of the story.
Whew, glad that was solved. The rule of twos.
No, wrong! It's morning, and Zom's out and about again. He's up to his shenanigans of eating somebody, but this is not just anyone. This is one of the judges that sentenced him. And this judge was a fat guy, but he still ate them all. And one of Camorian PD's finest got his face bitten off. And after that, he's done eating. And Zom lets them take him off to jail again.
I think this is the grotesque humor that Clark Ashton was talking about in that letter to Derleth. It's horrific and all, but my reaction was to laugh at this gruesome scene. Because it's written like this, too. He had eaten no less a personage than one of the eight judges, and not satisfied with picking the bones of this rather obese individual, had devoured by way of dessert the more outstanding facial features of one of the police who had tried to deter him from finishing his main course. So we're not making it up. There is a Camorian PD in this story. Also, I like that it says the more outstanding facial features. Does that merely mean that it was his nose, you know, because it stands out from his face?
Yeah, or maybe his eyebrows as well.
Or maybe he's just a really good-looking detective with outstanding facial features. It's just a tragedy.
Could be.
That somebody so good-looking had to get their face eaten.
Yeah.
This is kind of Smith's version of The Cat Came Back, you know, that old song.
Yeah.
They keep getting rid of the cat. The cat keeps coming back. This is his version of that.
What? What? Cat came back. She wouldn't stay away. She was sitting on the porch the very next day.
So everyone in town is getting superstitious about all this. I wonder why. People are leaving the city, and priests are recalling lost prophecies saying that they need to sacrifice to the gods. Looking at where they buried him last, the rocks are moved slightly, enough for a snake or a rat to get out. They don't wait. They want to get him killed again fast, so Athamaeus is called to task.
And I think at this point you could skip making any new laws.
Right.
Let's just take care of business here.
But Zom looks even more different this time. His modeling had developed more than a suggestion of startling and repulsive pattern, and his human characteristics had yielded to the inroads of an unearthly distortion. The head was jointed to the shoulders almost without an intermediation of a neck. The eyes were set diagonally in the face with oblique bulgings and flattenings. The nose and mouth were showing a tendency to displace each other, and there were still further alterations which I shall not specify, since they involved an abhorrent degradation of man's noblest and most distinctive corporeal members. I shall, however, mention the strange pendulous formations like annulated dewlaps or wattles into which his kneecaps had evolved.
Well, so that's confusing. Is he becoming more toad-like or more snake-like?
Dude, I think he's just becoming more weird-like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's got wattles on his knees. What's that about? That doesn't make any sense. And then what's this man's noblest and most distinctive corporeal members? Is he talking about his weenie?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
He's got like some weird penis that's going on?
Abhorrent degradation of man's noblest and most distinctive corporeal members. Yeah, you could interpret it that. Well, I'm sure that that's weird, too. I mean, there's no way that this guy, there's no way that he looks like this and has a normal penis. Yeah, there's no way he has a normal penis.
That would be extra weird if he did.
Oh, my God, that'd be the weirdest tale of all.
So, since Zom doesn't have much of a neck anymore, it's a hard task to chop off this head in one go, but Athamaeus has the skills and he is totally up for it. This time, they're going to put the body in a bronze sarcophagus with the head in a smaller bronze box, and the lids are going to be soldered shut. The head and the body were put on opposite sides of town, and Athamaeus and some dudes are ordered to watch the head.
In a courtyard of a deserted mansion, because why not? Put it in the spookiest place possible. Speaking of why not, let's break out some foom wine.
Oh, dude, yeah. Well, they feel like they finally got him now. Like, this is it. There's no way he's going to get out of little rabbit holes here. They've got him. So they're going to party. So Athamaeus and the guards, they have a little drink. They do a little gambling while on guard duty, I might add. And they're having a pretty good time until they hear a kind of gong sound. It's the head box, and it's banging and denting out. Whatever's inside is busting out of the thing.
Yeah.
The head is trying to escape. Finally, it breaks open and out comes a dark, ever-swelling mass of incognizable matter, frothing as with the venomous foam of a million serpents, hissing as with the yeast of fermenting wine, and putting forth here and there great, sooty-looking bubbles that were large as pig bladders.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it knocks over some torches and the guys are just freaking out. I figured they're just like screaming like little girls.
I'm sure they are. It starts to form a round blackish ball on whose palpitating surface the nascent outlines of random features were limned with the flatness of a drawing. There was one lidless eye, tawny, pupilless, and phosphoric, that stared upon us from the center of the ball while the thing appeared to make up its mind.
So the thing slinks off. They chase after it. And they think it's heading towards the part of town where the body is.
It's revealing itself as a protoplasmic kind of shifting thing. I love it. But what did they think would happen? I mean, I also like when they're talking about chasing after it. They go, we were a little drunk, but we went right after it, as well as guys who are pretty drunk can do. Like they were proud of it.
I know.
It's like, people are getting eaten, man. That's the reason you were on guard duty.
Yeah.
This guy's been breaking out and eating folks every night, and you weren't sure that that plan would work. Why are you drinking and gambling, you fools? Gosh.
Yeah. They should have been a little bit more cautious about the whole thing.
Yes.
They keep upping their stakes, and they should be like, you know, we upped our stakes the last couple of times. We're not sure this is going to work, so we probably should be extra careful about it.
Yes.
But they weren't.
But they weren't.
So the streets are quiet as it's very late. Everyone has gone home. The thing is so quick they lose it. They don't know where it actually goes. But then they hear the other guards looking around and it seems that the body has gotten out too. So these guys are also freaking out because they saw pretty much the same kind of thing.
Right.
So for them, the body that was buried under the stones, but the stones moved up like it was under an earthquake. And then they said, a python-shaped mass of frothing and hissing matter had poured forth from amid the blocks and had vanished into the darkness towards Camorium. All the city's guards are on full alert. Everybody's out looking for these things. They're even getting the guys that are off duty on duty to try and find it. But as dawn comes, they got nothing. So folks start coming into town. Merchants are setting up their stalls. And the guards are thinking, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, this guy's just about. Now, maybe they should have frozen him. Or burned him, which probably would have been easy.
Burning him is, yeah, that's the first thing that I was thinking. It's like, why didn't they burn him? But maybe there's some religious reason why they didn't burn him.
Well, I don't know what they could have done. I feel like if you would have burned him, if you burned him and it happened in the story, he'd still come back to life, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So in the square, they hear a dread scream. It seems two wayfarers are struggling with a monster, and they think it's Zom, but he looks really different.
The head, in its third reunion with that detestable torso, had attached itself in a semi-flattened manner to the region of the lower chest and diaphragm, and during the process of this novel coalescence, One Eye had slipped away from all relation with its fellow, or the head, and was now occupying the navel, just below the embossment of the chin. Other and even more shocking alterations had occurred. The arms had lengthened into tentacles with fingers that were like knots of writhing vipers, and where the head would normally have been, the shoulders had reared themselves to a cone-shaped eminence that ended in a cup-like mouth. Most fabulous and impossible of all, however, were the changes in the nether limbs. At each knee and hip, they had re-bifurcated into long, lithe proboscides that were lined with throated suckers. By making a combined use of its various mouths and members, the abnormality was devouring both of the hapless persons whom it had seized.
That's some crazy stuff.
Wow, yeah.
His whole head slipped down to his chest, so he's got sort of a...
Armanzola kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's totally gruesome. He's completely inhuman now. He's just this Lovecraftian... I mean, he's almost like a Shoggoth, is what I was thinking.
Yeah, tentacle arms and all that stuff.
So the guards aren't sure how to attack this thing without killing the people that it's attacking, because they're all kind of just mixed up together. Eventually, it consumes those poor guys, and the soldiers attack... But this time, Zom seems to be done with the whole captured and beheading game.
Yeah.
So he fights back. Also, he grows. It says, the rate at which the swelling progressed and the proportions which the thing attained as it covered the block from sight and lapsed down on every side with undulating, inundating folds, which would have been enough to daunt the heroes of remotest myth. It's just getting bigger and bigger and taking over a whole city block. So it's kind of, it's almost becoming a kaiju sort of thing here.
Yeah, it's bulging toward them with a slow, interminable stretching of boa-like arms.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And people are just running away screaming and crying.
The whole city is evacuating because this creature gets bigger and bigger. Eventually, Athamaeus, he's like, yeah, this is beyond our control. And he runs.
I am proud to say, however, that I lingered on the edge of the empty square for some time with more than one backward and regretful glance. The thing that had been Nygath and Zom was seemingly content with its triumph, and it brooded supine and mountainous above the vanquished Aeon block. Its myriad hisses sank to a slow, minor sibilation, such as might issue from a family of somnolent pythons, and it made no overt attempt to assail or even approach me. But seeing at last that the professional problem which it offered was quite insoluble, and divining moreover that Camorium was by now entirely without a king, a judicial system, a constabulary, or a people, I finally abandoned the Doom City and followed the others.
And that's the end of the story.
That is truly the end of the story. Zhaum wins.
Wow, that's crazy. He just takes over the city and everybody just sort of abandons it. That's it, the end.
That's it.
When I read it too, I'm like, wait, is that actually just the end of the story? And yeah, it is the end of the story.
It's almost like a comic anecdote more than a story. I couldn't divine, like, they didn't do anything wrong.
No.
Really?
No.
There was no... This was no punishment for some bad sorcery or ill treatment of prisoners or anything like that. He was a really bad guy. He was doing bad stuff, and then they tried to defeat him, and it didn't work because he's really a monster.
Yeah. I mean, Zom was smiling the whole time, so I guess this was his plan, ultimately, was to be killed and then reborn even more and more powerful each time until he was finally big enough to just take over the city.
Although, I wonder if it was a plan, because it seems like they caught him by accident. And he didn't even know that they were going to catch him because he was having fun doing those raids.
Right.
And sending those letters to Detective Graves. Sometimes with threatening pictures of his wife.
What?
Yeah, there's a whole thing.
Oh, that is not cool.
Yeah, it said they caught him in broad daylight and it was as if he didn't even mean for them to do it. But then he just kind of smiles and goes, okay, I'll do this now.
Do you think Batman would have been able to handle this thing?
Batman?
Yeah.
He would have tried all the stuff we discussed, right? Freezing, burning.
Yeah.
I think he definitely would have... It's hard to say.
This might be beyond the scope of Batman. That's what I'm thinking. I think Batman would have tried a bunch of different stuff and it probably just wouldn't have worked. And then Batman 2 would have had to move out of Gotham City.
Just deserted it.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what's cool about the story is that, like you said, nobody did anything wrong, but just sometimes nature will make decisions for humanity and you just have to roll with it. Like...
That's right.
When Pompeii was destroyed, it got caught in that explosion. You know, those people weren't doing anything wrong necessarily. It just happened. And things like this happen, and you just got to move on or die. That's pretty much all that can happen.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it's sort of sobering, but mostly the way that it's written is kind of comical.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it's actually trying to say something. Is it a fable or some kind of allegory for something?
I don't think so. I mean, it has that element of, you know, this is a thing that they try to kill and it just keeps coming back stronger until it eventually takes over everything. So I suppose bad ideas or violence, it could be a metaphor for something like that.
Yeah. Or it's just an interesting story.
I think it's just a monster who keeps coming back and spells doom for this town. It's an interesting interesting cap on the history of a famous city.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So I want to thank Richard Wolf for selecting it. I think he did a great job. Thank you for also supporting our trip to Providence in 2017. We had a great time, and hopefully you enjoyed the audio from that.
Thanks so much for recommending the story, and I'm glad we could be with you as you put those miles on the treadmill. Next week, we're doing a Robert E. Howard story. It's called The Hooved Thing.
Right, yes. You've already read it, yeah?
I've already read it, and I enjoyed it a lot. It's really okay, fun. Good. Yeah. So we'll be back with that one, and it's going to be a blast.
Well, I can't wait. And with that, I'm Chris Lackey.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And you've been listening to
the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. You caught me.
At hppodcraft.com.